This is the introduction for the News Gazette, Part 1.
Good morning. This is Victoria reading the News Gazette for Friday, April 7th, 2017. We will start today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, U.S. Launches Missile Strike on Airbase. American warships mount surprise assault on government-controlled airbase, where Syrian military planes involved in chemical weapons attack took off. President Donald Trump calls U.S. attack vital to deter future use of poison gas and calls on other nations to join in seeking to end the slaughter and bloodshed in Syria. The article continues on Section A3. The United States blasted a Syrian airbase with a barrage of cruise missiles Thursday night in a fiery retaliation for this week's gruesome chemical weapons attack against civilians. President Donald Trump cast the U.S. assault as vital to deter future use of poison gas and called on other nations to join in seeking to end the slaughter and bloodshed in Syria. It was the first direct American assault on the Syrian government and Trump's most dramatic military order since becoming president just over 2 months ago. Announcing the assault from his Florida resort, Trump said there was no doubt Syrian President Bashar Assad was responsible for the chemical attack, which he said employed banned gases and killed dozens. Assad choked out the lives of innocent men, women, and children, Trump declared. The U.S. strikes hit the government-controlled Sharat airbase in central Syria, where U.S. officials say the Syrian military planes that dropped the chemicals had taken off. The U.S. missiles hit at 8:45 p.m. in Washington, 3:45 a.m. Friday morning in Syria. The missiles targeted the base's airstrips, hangars, control tower, and ammunition areas, officials said. Syrian state TV reported a U.S. missile strike on a number of military targets and called the attack an aggression. The surprise U.S. assault marked a striking reversal for Trump, who warned as a candidate against the United States getting pulled into the Syrian civil war, now in its seventh year. But the president earlier in the week appeared moved by the photos of children killed in the chemical attack, calling it a disgrace to humanity that crossed a lot of lines. About 60 U.S. Tomahawk missiles fired from warships in the Mediterranean Sea targeted an airbase in retaliation for a chemical weapons attack that American officials believe Syrian government aircraft launched with a nerve agent, possibly sarin. The president did not announce the attacks in advance, though he and other national security officials ratcheted up their warnings to the Syrian government throughout the day Thursday. I think what happened in Syria is one of the truly egregious crimes and shouldn't have happened and it shouldn't be allowed to happen, Trump told reporters traveling on Air Force One to Florida, where he was holding a two-day summit with Chinese President Xi Jinping. The strike came as Trump was hosting Xi in meetings focused in part on another pressing U.S. security dilemma, North Korea's nuclear program. Trump's actions in Syria could signal to China that the new president isn't afraid of unilateral military steps, even if key nations like China are standing in the way. Trump has advocated greater counterterrorism cooperation with Russia, Assad's most powerful military backer. Just last week, the Trump administration signaled the United States was no longer interested in trying to push Assad from power over his direction of a conflict that has killed hundreds of thousands of people and led to the worst refugee crisis since World War II. U.S. military officials sought to portray the strikes as an appropriate, measured response. But the assault still risks plunging America into the middle of Syria's conflict, complicating the safety of hundreds of U.S. forces fighting a separate campaign against the Islamic State group in the north of the country. If Assad's military persists in further gas attacks, the Trump administration might logically pursue increased retaliation. Russia and Iran, Assad's allies, pose other problems. Russian military personnel and aircraft are embedded with Syria's, and Iranian troops and paramilitary forces are also on the ground helping Assad fight the array of opposition groups hoping to topple him. Before the strikes, U.S. military officials said they informed their Russian counterparts of the impending attack. The goal was to avoid any accident involving Russian forces. Nevertheless, Russia's deputy UN ambassador, Vladimir Safrakov, warned that any negative consequences from the strikes would be on the shoulders of those who initiated such a doubtful and tragic enterprise. The United States also notified its partner countries in the region prior to launching the strikes. Trump's decision to attack Syria came 3.5 years after President Barack Obama threatened Assad with military action after an earlier chemical weapons attack killed hundreds outside of Damascus. Obama had declared the use of such weapons a red line. At the time, several American ships in the Mediterranean Sea were poised to launch missiles, only for Obama to abruptly pull back after key U.S. ally Britain and the U.S. After key U.S. ally Britain and the U.S. Congress balked at his plan. He opted instead for a Russian-backed plan that was supposed to remove and eliminate Syria's chemical weapons stockpiles. The next story on the first page is entitled Hotel Deal Revisions Proposed by Natalie Wickman. City staff disclosed in Urbana possible revisions Thursday to a proposed redevelopment agreement for the Landmark Hotel, including that the developer lowers the city contribution to $7 million in post-construction bonds paid over 15 years. The original deal proposed by developer Crimson Rock Capital had the city contributing $9.5 million in the post-construction bonds over 20 years to help convert Landmark into a Hilton Tapestry boutique hotel. According to the document, the revisions were spurred by specific resident concerns over the project. Moving on to Section A6 for the completion of this article. One of the concerns is that Hilton isn't fully on board, so the city said it would not provide the money unless guaranteed the hotel would become part of the Hilton Tapestry brand. Another concern was that the developer would not commit a full-service restaurant within the new hotel. The city said they could require a full-service destination restaurant, plus 3 meals a day and room service to guests, according to the document. The city noted that a concern is Landmark's current owner asking for too much money by selling the property for $5.5 million. However, since it's a private deal, any changes will be by negotiation between the developer and the owner, according to the document. The proposed project manager for the 94-year-old hotel is Newcastle Hotel and Resorts, and the proposed architect is John T. Campo & Associates. Crimson Rock representatives Dionis Rodriguez and Bill Walsh said the whole project will cost $19 million, or $146,154 per key, and retain the current hotel's 128 bedrooms. The City Council will decide whether to continue with the negotiations and all of its revisions at its meeting on Monday. Next article on page one is entitled Work of Heart. This is by Nicole LaFond and it is in connection with Cunningham Children's Home. Urbana students create quilt for annual benefit festival kicking off today. In the age of iPhones and hoverboards, owning a quality homemade quilt isn't usually at the top of a 2017 teenager's wish list. But a group of Urbana Middle School 6th and 8th graders would like to change that. As a part of the community service project in their advisory classes this spring, three middle school educators, Terry Medwed, Judith Peace, and Holly Spencer, teamed up for the second year in a row to have their students create a quilt, which will be sold at the Cunningham Children's Home 13th Annual Festival of Quilts today and Saturday and donated to a child who lives there. About 30 students were involved in the project, each tasked with designing a square of the quilt. Article continues on A6. The theme this year, the sun. The rules, be as imaginative as you want. A requirement, 8th grader Keenan Mandaway could definitely get behind. I really like to draw, he said. So to be able to do that and be creative while giving something back to the community at the same time, that was really great. The kids designed, drew and coloured their pieces during advisory period, a 15-minute break in the school day, where groups of students meet with an assigned teacher and talk about anything from current events to sharing studying advice. I enjoyed socialising and getting to be creative and give back, 8th grader Miranda Ecker said of the Community Service Project, which was funded through a $1,000 grant from the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation. A help compared with last year when the quilt was funded on a shoestring budget, said Medwed. While the kids worked, the three advisory teachers took the opportunity to talk to their students about the history of quilt making and the importance of giving back to the community, especially a real gem organization like the Cunningham Children's Home, Medwed said. When talking to adolescents, they can get really wrapped up in not having the newest phone or the newest gym shoes. But when you start to put it in context for them and talk about how there are kids out there that don't have responsible adults to take care of and support them, they start to realize some of these things don't matter, she said. You're never too young to get involved in giving back. Medwed said, it works nicely that her current artistic passion involves making textile quilts, and the Children's Home's largest annual fundraiser just happens to be all about these handmade blankets. The festival this weekend celebrates the Children's Home-made long-standing tradition of receiving quilt donations from the United Methodist women and other quilters across the state for more than 100 years, according to Charlie Joller, the Director of Advancement for Cunningham. The quilts may seem like just a blanket to some people, but for children who have very little, it can mean a lot more, she said. It's really neat to see kids from the community who have such a desire to help. So many kids don't appreciate what they have. Our kids sometimes come to us with all their belongings in a garbage bag. A lot of people don't realize that, she said. The Festival of Quilts has been a tradition for us. Quilts were given to kids when they came here because they didn't have anything, and it gave them a sense of safety and ownership because they could wrap up in a quilt. To see these other youth helping us carry out that tradition is wonderful. The students helped make the quilt plan to come out to the festival this weekend, and some, like 8th grader Ashley Jones, are even saving up coins to use to buy treats from bakery or bid on other quilts at the event. I'm happy to help out. It really made me feel lucky to have what I do have, and I shouldn't take things for granted, she said. The same goes for 8th grader Victoria Ross, who said she hopes to do another project like this in the future because it made her realize other people don't have as much as we do. 8th grader Joseph Tull hopes that students who receive the quilt get some good use out of it. It makes me feel good to give this to a kid that is lonely and to help them know that somebody is there that loves them and wants to give them an awesome quilt. It's like a gift, he said. I wish we could do this more in school because it gives us a really good experience to do something for the community. The Quilt Festival will take place from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. today and Saturday. There's a $5 suggested donation at the door and plenty of items to purchase or bid on throughout the day, Jolly said. The funds raised go towards supporting Cunningham's programs and services. The Children's Home receives funding from the state each year, but that doesn't cover the true cost of operating the home. There's a gap of about $36 a day per child, Jolly said. This goes a long way to help us fill that gap. Last year, about 1,400 people attended the fundraiser, which raised more than $66,000 for Cunningham. Back now on page one of the Gazette. Article entitled CU Homeless Shelters Close for the Season by Deborah Pressey. Some of Champaign-Urbana's homeless people are back to spending the night where they used to, outdoors, now that both winter emergency shelters have closed for the season. Austin's Place, the shelter for women, lodged at Faith Unity Methodist Church, closed in mid-March, and the men's shelter that was housed at three different churches in Champaign closed at the end of last month. Since the men's shelter closed at its last location, New Covenant Fellowship Church in downtown Champaign, a few people have been relocated to communities with year-round shelters, according to CU at Home Managing Director Rob Dowless. The article then continues on section A5. But even without a place to sleep, most of those who were using shelter space don't want to be relocated because they have part-time jobs, family, and or support in this community, according to Terry Andrews, an assistant at the agency's Phoenix Drop-In Center. The truth is that they are on the street, he said. The men's shelter started out the winter in January at Faith United Methodist and First Presbyterian churches, but moved in mid-March to New Covenant, where plans are being made for it to reopen December 1st for 4 months next winter, pastors said. The men's shelter served about 18 to 25 men a night, said Reverend Chuck Carlson's at First Presbyterian. It was pretty consistent, he said. At New Covenant, a handy location for many of the homeless, I'm not sure it was ever below 20, said Reverend Renee Antrosio, the church's pastor. That church turned its dining room space that was formerly used by the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen into a temporary men's shelter after getting its fire alarm system updated to meet city code, Antrosio said. Austin's Place, the winter shelter for women at First United Methodist Church, served 22 different women over the winter season, according to information posted on its website. While spring weather has been delivering rain and overnight temperatures in the 30s lately, the churches that stepped forward to help were never intended to stay open longer than March, said Beverly Baker, Director of Community Impact for the United Way of Champaign County. That's the funding that we could eke out for the year, she said. Antrosio and New Covenant is serving as a temporary shelter site to serve God and be responsive to the needs of the community. The idea is for the church to serve as an incubator space for the men's shelter, as it did for the soup kitchen, until a permanent shelter site is found, she said. Meanwhile, a non-profit group is being formed to raise money and gear up for next year's operation of the men's shelter, said Reverend Cheryl Palmer, pastor of Faith Methodist United. Faith United Methodist. That church took on administrative duties for the men's shelter this past winter and will be doing that again next winter, Palmer said. Plans are to raise the $50,000 needed for the next winter's men's shelter operation through an interfaith fundraising effort with the help of the United Way. While plans are being made to add an extra month for winter 2017-18 by opening in December instead of January, running a men's shelter for 12 months would cost about $200,000, Palmer said. We just can't pull that off. Continued funding is largely going to be on the community's generosity. State and federal money for emergency shelter isn't available, Baker said. It's tough, that's for sure. A lot of communities are going through the same thing. Back to page one for the final story, entitled Course of Action Gives Gibson City a Boost. May 1 is target date to open 12-hole format, by Marcus Jackson. The mood at Thursday's Gibson Area Chamber of Commerce meeting was a good one, with community business leaders smiling and carrying on lively conversations inside the Sand Trap restaurant. It's a departure from the nervous energy that had crept into the town in recent months as the status of Railside Golf Course, a primary attraction in the community, remained up in the air. Railside closed in November, citing declining participation, and owner Doug Brooker put the 197-acre golf course, including its 5,000-square-foot clubhouse featuring a pro shop, restaurant, lounge and banquet centre, on the market. Article continued on A6. It was depressing, said longtime Gibson City resident and business owner Dan Kierfot. Everybody was unhappy, upset. That all changed last month when a group of 28 investors, led by Guy Percy, purchased about 117 acres of the facility, in addition to the clubhouse, in a sale that became official on Wednesday. The portion of the golf course purchased by the group included 10 holes of railside, which will be transformed into a 12-hole golf course, a trend being popularized by golfing legend Jack Nicklaus. "It's absolutely a sigh of relief for the community," Kearfort said. "Everybody's in a much better mood today. We're not going to have 18 holes, but at least we're going to have a golf course." And an operational golf course, no matter the number of holes, is a shot in the arm for the business community in Gibson City and the area as a whole. Golf attracts visitors to town from nearby communities, who in turn spend money at local restaurants, gas stations and other businesses while in the area. The golf course is certainly a draw, and it attracts people from a 15 to 20 mile radius, Gibson Area Chamber of Commerce President Tim Schaefer said. We even used to get people coming down from the Chicago area on Illinois 47 because it's an easy drive with the traffic. Railside, which opened in the north edge of town in 1993, has also attracted some folks to move to town over the years, including many who have become pillars of the community. Percy moved to Gibson City in 1993 to serve as the course's PGA professional, a role he held for 11 years. He has coached successful boys and girls golf teams at Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School and is currently a country financial agent in town. Guy Percy doesn't come to Gibson City and make an impact on this community if not for that golf course, Kearfort said. The course has also helped the growing Gibson area hospital attract talented doctors to join its staff. Dr. Mark Spangler doesn't come to this town without the golf course. There's a lot of top doctors here, and most of them golf, and the golf course helped them get here, Percy said. Down the road, if the course was closed, who wouldn't move here because of that? I guess we'll never know. It's impacted a lot of people, so it was important. Now that the sale is official and he and his group have taken ownership of the course, Percy and Co. will get to work in earnest with the hopes of being open for play around May 1st. The grass hadn't been mowed since November 1st, so once the ground dries from all the recent rainfall, they'll get the grass cut. They'll get some fresh sand in the bunkers, edge those, and take care of the weeds on the course to get it in tip-top shape. The clubhouse will be getting a new roof in the coming days too, and a wall will be put up inside, separating the pro shop from the restaurant. "We've got a lot of catching up to do," said Percy, who gave a tour of the grounds on Thursday to a potential club pro candidate. "We'll make a few changes to the course that will help us become the 12-hole course we want it to be. We'll have to remove a few trees and build a couple new trees. We don't have to have them done on day one because they can tee off from some other spots." The investment group preferred to purchase all the land and keep Rainside as an 18-hole course, but a deal couldn't be reached. Under its new configuration, Railside is to become the first 12-hole golf course in Illinois. Across the country, 12-hole courses are beginning to pop up, such as Utah's Red Ledges, the first ever Jack Nicklaus signature 12-hole golf course. Nicklaus, the 18-time major championship winner, is also holding 12-hole events at Muirfield Village, his home club in Dublin, Ohio. "They're popping up all over the place. I just got back from Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, and Tiger Woods just built one there," Percy said. "We think it beats the heck out of 9 holes. In a 9-hole setup, the course would have to be closed in event there's a high school match being played or a league match. The high schools or the league plays can stay on 1 6-hole loop, and then the members or the public can use the other loop," Percy said. "And with outings using a gunshot shotgun start, 100 people can start at once under a 12-hole setup, as opposed to 80 on a 9-hole configuration." "We're not afraid to be different," Percy said. "We're still going to encourage 18 holes. You'll just have to repeat one of those 6-hole loops. Whether it's 9 holes, 12 holes, or 18, the folks in town, for a variety of reasons, are thrilled to have the course back in operation. As you can imagine, something that's been around nearly 30 years that was locally and privately built by people who care about the town, there's a public aspect to it, no doubt, Schaefer said. Had the investment group not come along when it did, the 197 acres of land was set to become farmland. And while it's important to grow corn and soybeans, a few wanted to see the takeover of Railside. We're excited because we were on the cusp of having no golf course. While we'd love to be 18 holes, we're going to make the best out of what we've got and have a whole lot of fun with it. So the town is extremely excited about it, Percy said. I think about all the kids who have been impacted by this place, who have worked here, played here, grew up here. I'm still a kid at heart. I want to have a place to go play too. And this is the last article for part one of today's News Gazette, Friday, April 7th. Taking this one from section A5, entitled Police Investigating Two Business Holdups. This is by Mary Schenck. Urbana police are asking for the public's help finding the man who committed two armed robberies at businesses in the city. On Saturday, February 25th, at about 3.04 a.m., a man armed with a handgun entered the Circle K at 507 West University Avenue and walked behind the counter. He ordered the employee to lie on the floor and bound the employee's hands. He then ordered the employee to tell him how to open the cash register and took cash running from the store in an unknown direction. The robber was described as black, about 20 years old, approximately 5 feet 8 inches tall, wearing a black hooded sweatshirt, black pants and black mask over part of his face. On Saturday, March 25th, about 11.44 p.m., a man entered Lindy Lou's at 202 West University Avenue, displayed a handgun and demanded cash from an employee. Once he got the money, the robbers fled in a dark-coloured sport utility vehicle. That robber was described as black, about 25 years old, approximately 5 feet 10 inches tall with a medium build. He also wore a black hooded sweatshirt, black pants, black gloves, and a black cloth over part of his face. Both robberies are being investigated, and anyone with information is asked to call Urbana Police at 217-384-2320. Callers may remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477. Submit a tip on the Champaign County Crime Stoppers website, champaigncountycrimestoppers.com, or submit a tip on the free P3 Tips app, which is available in iTunes and Google Play app stores. Okay, that's the end of part one for today, the News Gazette, Friday, April 7th. I'm Victoria. We'll take a short break and return with the second half of the hour. Please stay tuned.